If you don't know SiriusXM, then listen up. Commercial-free music plus sports, comedy, talk, and news. They have it all. A lot of people think you need a car to enjoy SiriusXM, but you don't. You can listen outside the car. Right now, you can get your first 3 months of SiriusXM outside the car for free. Just go to SiriusXM.com/busted to see offer details and to subscribe. You can listen on your phone, at home, and online. That's SiriusXM.com/busted. Offer available to new SiriusXM streaming subscribers. SiriusXM, no car required. This is the Busted Open Podcast. You can listen to the full show Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Welcome to the Busted Open Podcast. This is Dave LaGreca. On today's episode, WWE Hall of Famer Bully Ray and I talk all about Backlash from last night. Big Sunday for the WWE. You had Backlash and The Last Ride. Backlash we get into, surprisingly enough, Sheamus and Jeff Hardy, the story going in and the possible story coming out. Also, we get into the greatest wrestling match of all time, the main event from Backlash between Randy Orton and Edge. And we talked The Last Ride and could we have seen the last of The Undertaker? All that right now on the Busted Open Podcast. Got to be honest with you, Bully. I thought a very, very good weekend for the WWE.
What made you think it was a good weekend? What did they do right in your eyes that made it a good weekend?
Well, Friday, I thought you had a fantastic match between AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan for the Intercontinental Championship. I thought The Last Ride that started streaming early on Sunday was another great chapter in that amazing documentary and some eye-opening comments from The Undertaker that I'm sure we're going to get into, if not today, this week. And then I thought a very good show with Backlash last night. So all in all, a very good weekend for the WWE.
I'm on board with the whole AJ Daniel Bryan thing. It would be impossible for AJ and Daniel Bryan to have a bad match. The Last Ride has been an incredible documentary. I watched part four last night after Backlash. Once again, really enjoyed it. I'm sure we're going to talk a little bit about it today. Especially, there was something in particular that Triple H said at the end of the documentary that just, man, it resonated with me so much. Last night, a decent Backlash. Overall, I was entertained by the show. I thought it was pretty fun. Got some stuff that I want to point out this morning that I thought was glaring. I want to go back to Friday, though, with SmackDown. What did you think of that episode's portrayal in the Jeff Hardy story?
Ooh, this is a great question, because this is something that a lot of people seem to be up in arms with, is that they're bringing up his past with substance abuse problems. It's a road that the WWE is not afraid to go down. They've done that before. They've done that with Jeff Hardy. They did that in the whole story with Chris Jericho and CM Punk. And it was CM Punk, obviously not with CM Punk, but with his father. The name of the pay-per-view last night was Backlash, but they got a lot of backlash from the fans. Every element that I saw in the story and what played out on Friday has happened before in the WWE. Even with the whole urine cup, and I think everyone was pretty, it was pretty unbelievable that Jeff Hardy can pee that much into a cup. He must have drank gallons of water before taking that urine test on Friday. But
A lot of liquids.
But it doesn't really seem to bother me as much as it seems to bother other people. Like, first of all, I always like a little bit of reality in pro wrestling. Everyone knows about the struggles that Jeff Hardy has had with substance abuse. And at the same time, like, Jeff Hardy's the hero coming out of that. Like, he's clean. He's saying he's clean. This is Sheamus poking the bear and trying to bring up his past to get under his skin. So I really don't have as much of a problem with the story as a lot of fans seem to have.
Much like you, and I've been saying this for years on the show, whenever professional wrestling mirrors real life, it always makes for the best stories. I thought the WWE has been doing a decent enough job with the Jeff Hardy, Sheamus story. I totally get what they're doing. Sheamus is their in-house bully. He's doing everything that a bully would do, whether it's verbally or physically, as we saw last night with Jeff Hardy. I think Jeff Hardy might owe Sheamus money, either that or Sheamus. Sheamus will lay his shit in, brother.
He did. He certainly did last night. That's for sure.
So when I saw the first episode of the Jeff Hardy story, I'm like, okay, I think maybe it just hit home a little with me because it was Jeff. And I was like, poor Jeff, this is, this might be a little too difficult. He's got a wife. He's got the kids. But I said to myself, it's real life. And I'm sure it's going to have a happy ending. Not that kind of happy ending, LaGreca. Stop smiling, please. Come on. Can we be serious for a moment? So the part about last night that really bothered me, and I'm hoping they're going to make good on this, was Corey Graves at the end of the match. And I know this is not Corey. I know this is being, these lines are being fed to him and he's being told what to say. Mm-hmm. And if he's being told what to say, then they probably have a good story in mind that's going to eventually pay off in the positive way for Jeff. Because if that's not the answer, then they went out of their way to bury him last night. And you know how everybody's talking about, oh, somebody got buried, people don't know what burial is in the wrestling business. I'm going to point out what looked like a burial last night. Hopefully they're not going to, but this could have been the burial. At the end of the match, Corey said, everyone who was counting on their hero, Jeff Hardy, was once again let down by Jeff Hardy. I'm paraphrasing there. Now, Corey actually started to say the line and then stopped. And I think that's because he had somebody in his ear saying, hold on, we're trying to get a camera shot, but we want to hear that line said emphatically. And then he went back and he started the line again. It's like they went out of their way to make sure that Corey told the world how big of a disappointment Jeff Hardy was to himself, his family, his fans. Like, there was an exclamation point on that sentence. Two things are happening there. They're either telling the story of disappointment so Jeff Hardy can come back and maybe beat Sheamus at Extreme Rules, or they're going out of their way to bury Jeff. Why would they be going out of their way to bury Jeff? I don't know. Maybe they're mad at Matt. And maybe for the first time, they're taking something out on Jeff instead of taking it out on Matt.
I hope you're wrong about that. I did remember the Corey Graves comment. And you would think with Extreme Rules coming up in mid-July that they're going to have a match. It seems fitting, especially with everything that's happening. Though, judging from the end of the match, I mean, Sheamus deserved that win. He won clean. It wasn't like there was shenanigans. He had his foot on the rope. They broke the count. He hit him with the bro kick, and he got the pin in the middle of the ring. So you could make a case that that's kind of the end of it. Because
why should they have a rematch?
Yeah, why should they have the rematch? Sheamus talked a lot of shit and backed it up and won the match clean in the middle of the ring. Now, I would think, though, with Extreme Rules coming up, that they're going to have another part of this story that's going to play out on SmackDown. But you could say that that was the final chapter in that feud. I don't think it is, but you could say that. And if it is, I think there's a lot of questions, especially based on what you just said, Bully.
I would have liked it a little bit more open-ended, so the Extreme Rules match would have to happen. It would logically have to happen. After the finish last night, after Sheamus hits his finish, his straight-up bro kick finish on Jeff, 1, 2, 3, straight in the middle. Oh, okay, Jeff, you lost. Yep, Jeff lost. How'd Jeff lose to Sheamus's finish? Who won, Sheamus? How? Right in the middle, clean with his finish. But they're going to have a rematch. Why? That's if they have the rematch. And then, yes. Like I said, it was the line at the end about Jeff Hardy being such a disappointment. Are we going to go to extreme rules and Jeff Hardy is going to prove that he's not a disappointment to himself, his family, and his friends? Well, I don't know. To me, it seems a little too late because last night was the perfect opportunity. That's why I'm hoping the WWE is not going out of their way to bury Jeff Hardy. I want to think better of them, especially when it comes to the name Hardy. But right now, when it comes to the name Hardy, I don't know if the WWE has a good taste in their mouth. And right after that match was over, Matt took to social media and put up a picture of him and his brother holding every single set of tag team championships that him and his brother have ever held. Not more than me and Devon, because that would be ludicrous. But close.
Well, then I would be calling one of them the greatest tag team wrestler of all time.
And I think Matt protecting his brother and saying, listen, we'll never let anybody forget what we did together. So that's my take on it from, you know, a bunch of different angles. What do you think?
I agree with you. And then, you know, a lot of people had problems with the story going in. If this is the way it ended, then I do have a problem with the story that they presented. Why bring up all the problems that he has had if you're not going to bring up the fact that he has overcome them and not only overcame all those things, but also overcame Sheamus? If this story ends by that match last night, then I do have a big problem with everything that happened here. Because why would you do that? Why would you bring up something that people already know about, that's already been talked about on, you know, documentaries that you can see on the WWE Network, just to bury Jeff Hardy? Makes absolutely no sense to me. But this is the WWE, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who saw that, including Matt Hardy. Like you said, that's why he put up the tweet. That's probably looking at this as a burial. Again, I'm hoping it's not. Hopefully we have a continuation to the story on Friday, and it leads to a match at Extreme Rules where Jeff Hardy's going to overcome and beat Sheamus. But based on what we saw last night, there really isn't a reason to have a rematch.
Like I said, I would have liked it to be a little bit more open-ended, where Extreme Rules would have had to have happened. Maybe they're going to give us a story in which Extreme Rules, that match has to happen. Extreme Rules gives Jeff Hardy the chance to jump off of something, you know, i.e. Yeah. Recreate his ladder, you know, jumping off a ladder, putting Swanton Sheamus through a table, or do something crazy and death-defying and insane. A typical Jeff Hardy spot, maybe where he doesn't have to pin Sheamus. Maybe it's a tables match where all he has to do is put Sheamus through the table and he wins, and that kind of protects Sheamus. But Sheamus beat the shit out of Jeff Hardy last night and beat him in the middle with his finish. So as a fan, I got to look at it and go, well, Jeff lost. You know, Sheamus was the better man. End of the story. Let's move on.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens. We'll see on SmackDown. We'll see with Extreme Rules coming up in just a few weeks. And Bully, when we come back, and again, this is all about Backlash right now, let's get into what they were claiming was going to be the greatest wrestling match of all time. Did it live up to expectations?
Go ahead, Bully. I'll tell you why some of those insiders, those experts, those so-called know-it-alls have it totally wrong when it comes to that match of Orton versus Edge.
The Hawk and Barack Show.
Iron Mike Tyson, iconic name, gave us the knee post on Instagram and Twitter. No caption needed. I mean, I like Mike's opinion. I would love to hear him speak on it, but I appreciate the post.
I think a caption is so important. Being kneeled says it all, you know, but people want to hear your words. People want to know what's on your mind, Mike. You know, you're such an iconic figure. We love to hear you speak.
Weekdays from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern, only on SiriusXM Fight Nation, channel 156.
Obviously, Lashley and Drew McIntyre for the championship was earlier. The main event was Edge and Randy Orton. And Byron Saxton, just before the match, said that this was going to be done completely different. From sounds to camera angles, and it certainly was. And I got to admit, it gave me chills the way that match started, with the Madison Square Garden microphone coming down from the ceiling, a la, you know, MSG back in the 70s and 80s, and then you hear the voice of Howard Finkel. I mean, a pretty amazing way to start that match.
First of all, I don't think that that match should have gone on last for the same reason I don't think any match that's not a World Heavyweight Championship should go on last. Yes, I do understand every once in a while there's extenuating circumstances when you have mega super to the moon stars like an Undertaker or a Cena. Not that Randy and Edge aren't that, but they're having a wrestling match on the same card as the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Drew is the guy right now, and thus I think that match should be last. That's my opinion. That has nothing to do with Randy and Orton's match, because I'm going to get into, Randy and Edge's match, because I'm going to get into that. Championship should be last. Keeps the credibility on the championship. But it is entertainment, so how much credibility could possibly be on their championships?
Really quick, quick, because I think this is a good point you're making. It used to be that way. I mean, you know.
When AJ was the champion. They got AJ'd last night.
Yeah, and
Bobby got AJ'd.
And I think it goes back, and boy, I don't mean to be a conspiracy theorist here, but it kind of goes back even before that. I would say CM Punk. It seems like once CM Punk became the champion, because I think every pay-per-view while CM Punk was champion, you know, John Cena had the main event and not CM Punk. But before that, I would have to think that that world championship was always the main event. You know, some people say, myself included, that the greatest WrestleMania match of all time was The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 25. That was not the main event. It was the World Championship was the main event. And it seemed like around the era of CM Punk, that seemed to have changed. Now, I get it. The world of sports entertainment, that championship doesn't have the same cachet as it should have been, as it should. Because really, like what you just said hit home. Drew McIntyre is now your guy. He's your championship title holder. He should be in the main event every time he defends that title.
He wins the championship at WrestleMania.
In the main event.
In the main event. Ding, ding, ding. Circle gets the square. Johnny, tell him what he's won. You've won Dingy More Beef Stew. He wins the WWE championships in the main event at WrestleMania, but is not good enough to main event Backlash? Come on now. Get the funk out of here.
Now, forget about the Edge Orton. Is it because of their claim that this is going to be the greatest wrestling match of all time?
They could claim whatever they want. I don't give a rat's ass. The claim of World Heavyweight Champion is the biggest claim in the company. That's it.
Yeah.
In a company right now that does not have the megastars that it once had, all you do is giving me a kink in the armor of Drew McIntyre telling me he's not good enough to go on last. Especially when it's a taped show. It's freaking taped. You can do it in any order. There's not going to be more or less crowd reaction. And oh, by the way, since you have the young boys and girls there, tell them to be louder for Bobby versus Drew. You can do anything you want. It's entertainment. You could be loud. You could be not loud. We could do this. I don't want to get into this too much. I think the world championship should be on last, especially when you have a mega, what you're trying to make is a mega babyface world champion. Back to Byron. I did not like Byron telling us all of these things that we were going to see and hear that are different. Just let me see and hear the things that are different. Let me be surprised. Don't prime me right off the bat. It's almost like they're telling us right off the bat, you might see some things here that you don't agree with, but we hope you like it anyway. Just do it, man. Surprise me. I don't want to know beforehand. Now, the Finkel stuff, off the charts. Off the charts. Loved it. Yeah. What a great nod to Howard. I'm sure Howard was grinning from ear to ear in heaven. I loved it. It felt like, as a Yankee fan, it felt like going to Yankee Stadium and hearing, what was the old man's name?
Bob Shepard.
Bob Shepard still doing the announcements, you know, every once in a while. It was awesome. I really loved it. God bless Howard. I'm lucky to have met the man and worked with the man and all of that great stuff. Proud to call him a friend. Happy to call him a friend. The camera angles in the match, I liked them all except for one. Were there any camera angles that you didn't like, Dave?
No, I'm thinking they had the overhead, they had the turnbuckle cam. No, there's nothing that strikes me that I did not like from the camera angles.
There was one camera angle that they did two or three times, and it was like for a second, a brief second, and it was the underneath shot. When Orton and Edge locked up, there was a camera shooting up at their faces. You know damn well there's no camera underneath the lockup. That camera angle, like I said, they maybe two or three times they showed me an underneath shot. I didn't need to see that shot, okay? It's like when the offense and the defense line up over the ball. I know there's no camera underneath the ball shooting up at these guys. I know there's that zip line camera. I know that there's different camera shots all over the field now, but that camera angle to me came across unrealistic. And since you only did it two or three times, you probably didn't need it at all. The piped in noise. I was not a fan of the piped in noise. What did you think of it?
I liked it. And here's why. And I'm definitely in the minority on this one, because I don't think there was one person on social media last night that agreed with me on this. But this is my take. And obviously, you know, I'm prepared for you to shoot it down if you
I'm not going to shoot it down because it's your opinion on something.
But what we're getting with the crowd is fake, for the lack of a better term. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they're getting, you know, these are not fans that paid for a ticket to come in and to watch. You know, like you mentioned last week, you hear chants and then the chants stop. Like, you're hearing chants from them saying, you know, fight forever. Like, you're getting the typical chants that you would probably get from a 15,000 paid to be there type of a crowd. But it's not a 15,000 paid to be there type of a crowd. So for me, Bully, already, I know the crowd out there isn't necessarily there to watch that match. They were told to be there to watch that match. Now, I'm not saying they didn't enjoy the match that they were watching. I'm not saying that some of the crowd noise that you got from them is not genuine. I don't know that. But if you're going to go all the way. Now, I'm not saying that I want to see this on a regular basis, but for me, watching that match for a moment, for a fleeting moment, I forgot. For a fleeting moment, I forgot that this match was taking place at the Performance Center in front of a roster of people that had to be there. Again, for just a moment, I bought in. And for me, and for that was enough for me to appreciate the fact that they had the piped in crowd noise.
As a wrestler, when there are matches happening on the same card that I'm on, I want to go out in the arena and experience them firsthand. I hate watching shit on the monitor. I can watch crap at home on my TV. So many times I would go out in the arena to experience the vibe. And obviously you have to hide, because you don't want the rest of the fans to see you, because you're distracting the fans from the match. Even your dog agrees, okay? So if I could, though, I would walk all the way up to the rail and sit in the front row, because I want to feel what it is to experience this match. If I was on that card last night, as a wrestler, I would want to be right up there ringside, or as close to that plexiglass as I could have gotten, to experience Edge versus Orton. That's how much of a fan I like to become when I'm watching a match that I'm invested in. What does everybody have in common that was at that arena last night who's working in the back? They're all wrestlers.
Yeah.
And if we're going to get the greatest wrestling match of all time, as a wrestler, I want to be as up close and personal to this as possible. First thing I would have did, everybody on the card, since Edge and Orton were last, everybody should have been out there. All the wrestlers in the back should have wanted to experience the greatest wrestling match ever with their own eyes, thus making it more of a crowd. Making it a louder crowd. Now we have all the young boys and young girls from NXT there. You tell them, be as loud as you possibly can. My point is this. I don't need piped in crowd noise telling me whether I should like or not like something. It feels a little forced. I would have had the entire roster out there. I would have had former agents that were wrestlers. Like if Devon was in the back or the Armstrongs were in the back or, you know, anybody there. Adam Pearce. And now you can tell the story. On and now it's about, look at all of the wrestlers out here, future superstars, current superstars, megastars. Look at all the former wrestlers who are agents now. Look at everybody out here that has the same thing in common. They're all wrestlers watching firsthand the greatest wrestling match ever. There's where your noise should have come from. Noise coming out of those people means more to me than piped in crowd noise, which is very subliminal. It's almost like they were using the piped in crowd noise to cover up any potential problems that there were going to be in the match. But guess what, Dave?
What's that?
There were no problems in the match. This was a damn good match. This was a great match. This was an excellent match. This was a very well performed match. This was like an 8-star match. And I don't put star ratings on anything.
The biggest names in the combat sports world are on MMA Tonight.
Cody Garbrandt joins us. I got to the title fast, under 2 years in the UFC, won a world championship, trailblazed to the top. This time is going to be way more generous, way more sacrifice. And I just said, are you prepared to throw it all in and erase the last few years and what happened, go from there? Once I had that heart to heart with myself and stopped really making excuses or just got back to the hard work, I mean, the simplest form of hard work pays off. Happy to be back, excited to have those feelings back inside the octagon, back to loving it and just working hard for it.
Tuesday through Thursday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern.
All right, let's go to the Twitter machine.
Okay, very good. Because here comes the burial.
Before my power rankings at 10 a.m.
Speaking of burial, Steve Gutenberg.
I love
culture.
Steve Mahoney. First of all, don't ever call him Steve
Mahoney
Gutenberg.
Is a jabroni.
His name is Mahoney.
Mahoney is a jabroni and not worth a nickel on that cameo gimmick.
That's not true. Come on. Don't say that. He's a very nice guy. Sister lives in Jersey. It was nice to hear about his sister living in Jersey for, you know,
75% over Steve Gutenberg all day long.
Of course. I mean.
So listen to this stupidity on the old Twitter machine. And this is where some wrestling fans just, ugh. 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 Carlos Cuevado says,
wasn't that the guitar player from Quiet Riot?
No, that was Carlos Cuevado. But thanks for playing. Carlos Cuevado says, thank you for mentioning that underneath camera angle. It honestly ruined the match, which is a shame because Edge and Orton did put on a great match. Give me a frickin' break. Edge and Orton went like 45 minutes last night, and you're going to tell me that a camera angle that lasted for 2 or 3 seconds in total ruined the match for you? Stop it. Please don't tweet stuff like that ever again. As a matter of fact, delete your account, Carlos, because that is asinine.
That's kind of strong. I think he's just going to, people seem to go to the extremes. My thing to Carlos is, yes, did it maybe take away from the match in the moment? I don't even remember the camera angle. You know, I might have blinked at that moment and I missed it. Now, if you want to say that it took away from it in the moment, okay, I'll buy
that. Ruined.
But it could. There's no way that a camera angle could ruin, like Bully said, a 45-minute, I think, as close to a masterpiece as they could have gotten under these circumstances from Edge and Randy Orton last night.
This is the whole cancel culture thing. Like, how you can say that that ruined a match is beyond me. That is just negative for the sake of being negative. and going on Twitter and like agreeing with me because you're chasing the hug and you think by agreeing with me on a camera angle is going to like do something good for you, except get you buried. I'm pointing out something that I would have stayed away from as a professional. You're telling me that the match was ruined for you, Carlos? Sorry. Big thumbs down on your tweet. The time of the match, and this is where I want to get into some of these wrestling journalists, credible wrestling journalists with their inside information. Dave, how long was the match? Like 43, 44 minutes? How long
did it go? It was like 44 and a half minutes long.
Straight through. The match was one continuous match as if it was live in front of 20,000 people. The match wasn't edited. It wasn't done a couple of times. They didn't yell cut. They didn't take a break. They went straight through like two professionals would. Two old school professionals would. Did they break or add in once or twice a camera shot, like that underneath camera shot of the lockup? Yeah, they would have had to have done that because there was no camera in that continuous shot. Edge and Orton, when the bell rang to when the bell rang, went straight through with this match. How do I know? Because I know. That's how I know. Not because some stooge in the back told me. Not because of some person who wants to be detrimental to the product called up a dirt sheet guy and say, hey, this is what really happened. Let's take away from how great the match was by saying they filmed it a bunch of times. Bullshit. Edge and Orton went straight through. Yeah, they might have had to do a pickup shot here or there that happened after everything was over. But that match ran straight through. That was a great wrestling match. I can't call it the greatest wrestling match ever because of the crowd situation. If that match was in front of a live crowd of 20,000 people, yeah, that match has potential to be one of the greatest wrestling matches ever. But Rock and Hogan at Mania in Toronto is the greatest wrestling match ever because of the complete organicness of the match. If you listen to the people, if you watch the work, there is a beauty to it that has not been replicated. Steamboat and Savage is not that, because Steamboat and Savage was discussed for months on end, as opposed to Rock and Hogan, which was discussed for minutes on end, if anything. That was working in its purest form and playing off a crowd that said, we're not going with what you're feeding us. We're going to do the complete 180. Let's see what you do with it now. And look at how they performed. I know you'd make a case for like a Flair versus Steamboat as the greatest wrestling match ever because of the actual focus on the word wrestling, and I get it. Last night, what I saw from those two guys was great. There was psychology. There was registering. There was selling. I love that they used finishes from other guys. Yep. The difference was they didn't prostitute these finishes. They hit these finishes. They got two counts. They got kickouts. And then they went back to selling. They didn't just get up and go to the next thing. I really enjoyed Orton versus Edge, and can't say enough good things about it.
And this is where, like, before you mentioned Corey Graves and what he said at the end of the Sheamus-Jeff Hardy match, this is where I give the commentators a lot of credit during the Edge and Orton match, because you said there was a lot of elements from other matches, a lot of finishes, a lot of finishers from a lot of wrestlers. I mean, the Garvin stomp, and they acknowledged the Garvin stomp, you know, the arm drags like Steamboat, the chops like Ric Flair, the angle slam, the, you know, Triple H's pedigree, the rock bottom. Like, there was so many different elements, which I really, again, pro wrestling is an art, and when it's at its best, you get lost in it. I got lost in that match last night. I wasn't thinking like, oh boy, they should have done that a little bit better. And oh, the noise is being piped in. It's such a distraction, or that camera angle. Like, I got lost by two artists in the ring. And you're talking about two of the best ever with Edge and Randy Orton. I said it on social media. It's hard to like compare this to like what you said with, you know, Hogan and The Rock at WrestleMania. I mean, because the crowd kind of made that match as well, the whole atmosphere of that match. But for what they were up against, I mean, two guys to put on that kind of a match in front of zero paid fans with a forced atmosphere. I mean, man, I mean, if anybody needs a bonus in their paycheck after what they did last night, it's Randy Orton and Edge, Bully.
And I want to reiterate for fans out there who might put stock in what they read on wrestling publications, dirt sheets, periodicals, on Twitter, newsletters, whatever it is. I want to set the record straight for them so they understand the truth. Edge and Orton was filmed straight through. One time, straight through. It was not multiple takes. There were about three or four close-up shots that were filmed. Otherwise, the match was straight through. So don't let what you read or hear affect your opinion on that match. Whether or not you think it was the greatest wrestling match of all time or not, that's your own opinion. Because everything in pro wrestling is subjective. Everything. But I thought they did a phenomenal job. I really enjoyed it. If it was in front of a crowd, it would have been off the charts. If it would have been in front of a perfect crowd, you put that in front of a Chicago, a town like that, a wrestling fan base like that. The match is incredible. Now they have something to feed off of. But I'll go back to what I said. Every wrestler that was there should have been out there in attendance. Every wrestler that was on the card that night, from Braun Strowman to Drew McIntyre to Bobby Lashley to the Iconics to Apollo Crews to everybody, should have been out there with a vested interest in the greatest wrestling match over. That's how you give something credibility. When you show that the wrestlers in the back are not afraid to show their face and they even want to watch it live, as opposed to your NXT young boys and young girls.
Your home for all things combat sports is SiriusXM Fight Nation. Start your day with Hall of Fame Pro Wrestling Talk on Busted Open.
Respect these men and women that build the business.
Then, the Auk and Barak Show keeps you up to date on all things boxing.
Boxing is the theater of the unexpected.
And MMA guru Luke Thomas has you covered for mixed martial arts.
Joe Rogan is the most important influencer in all of MMA.
The fight game broken down like nowhere else. Only on SiriusXM Fight Nation Channel 156.
Before we get back to Backlash, Bully, let's get into the last ride that followed Backlash last night. Episode number 4, what did you think? Especially the ending, which showed the conversation after Extreme Rules between The Undertaker and Vince McMahon.
Listen, since episode 1, it's been very entertaining. Just as sitting back as a fan and watching, I'm entertained by it. As a professional who got to share the ring on many occasions with The Undertaker, it's been entertaining. Being in one of the worst matches of all time with The Undertaker, the main event of the Great American Bash, and the Concrete Crypt match?
Yeah.
God awful. Nobody wanted to be there. Not one of us. Taker included. I love the storytelling, and I got to give the WWE Network props because there is good of a storytelling network or company as anybody I've ever seen out there, whether that's the Vice Channel or National Geographic or any of these, you know, networks that tell great stories. I think the network does a phenomenal job. I'm enjoying the Taker one. You know what really stands out to me, Dave? How much... Like last night, they talked about the Goldberg match, and I think they just went tip of the iceberg. They didn't go too in depth on it. You know, it was just one of those nights. But everybody wants to put all the heat on Goldberg, right?
Mm-hmm.
How about what Taker said about the match before the Goldberg match in Saudi with Taker and Kane versus Shawn and Triple H? What did Taker say about that match?
He put the blame on himself.
Why?
Well, he just said that he wasn't there. He was not there. And in the next scene with the Goldberg match, he said the same thing. He said that his mind was not there. But going back to like what you said with that tag match, he said he had personal problems that were going on and his mind was not there and he put it all on himself. Now, you had Triple H have an injury right at the beginning of that matchup, but yet Undertaker took all the blame.
My point is, anything can happen. You can be snake bit on any night, an injury. So it's okay for Triple H to get an injury, but it's not okay for Bill Goldberg to get a concussion? Oh, Goldberg got a concussion. He could have hurt Undertaker. Yeah, well, Taker got a concussion at WrestleMania 30. He could have hurt Brock Lesnar. You see how none of this stuff, anything can happen. It's a very dangerous sport. It's a very dangerous performance. It's a dangerous industry. Anything can happen on any night. Anybody can have a bad night. And in that ring, it takes two to tango. So, like, when you look at it's very crystal clear to me, like, the Goldberg situation, how things can go wrong, and we're all lucky to be around and talk about it because mistakes happen.
You know what, Bully, and this has been going on for years. I'm not just going to point the finger at pro wrestling fans, but even sports fans. You know, when your team doesn't win the World Series, when your team doesn't win the Super Bowl, your hockey team doesn't win the finals, fans love to point the finger of blame on somebody. You know, it can never be like, you know, they just didn't have it that night. Or, you know what, God forbid, the other team was better. They always have to take that finger of blame and point it on the pitcher or the head coach or the quarterback or the wide receiver that dropped the ball in the second quarter with 14 minutes left to go in the half. They always got to point the finger of blame. And it seems like when it comes to that Goldberg-Undertaker match, that everyone pointed the finger of blame on Goldberg. And it's just not fair. I mean, here's the Undertaker saying his mind wasn't there. His body wasn't there. You know, he's going through a lot right now. And I want to go to the end of the last ride, near the end, which was a high point. Undertaker had a very good tag match at Extreme Rules and felt good. And Vince McMahon went up to him and congratulated on him and said that, you know, everything was right. The timing was right. And Undertaker's response was, I'm done. I'm not there. I need to evaluate. You know what? My body's not there. Like, it really seemed last night that the Undertaker is coming to grips with the fact that his career is over.
That scene came across a little bit odd to me. Nothing about Taker's performance after Extreme Rules would lead you to believe that he was done. He looked as good as Extreme Rules as he ever had. That was a good night. Live crowd. They were on first. He was moving great. Even Michelle McCool talked about how he was walking down and up and down the apron, stomping and banging. He was hitting on all cylinders that night. So if you're riding the high of hitting on all cylinders, why are you coming back immediately and telling Vince, nah, man, I'm done. It's over with that. I just can't go anymore. And what else I found interesting is anytime you see Taker or Vince having a conversation on the last ride, they are very aware of where that camera is at any given moment, especially Vince. You're going to tell me that they weren't aware of that camera right over their shoulder in that given moment? I don't know, came off a little weird, but it doesn't even matter because obviously Taker had a great night at Extreme Rules. Obviously, we know what we got from him and AJ at WrestleMania. So much fun to watch. I think there's a lot more in Taker's tank, especially with this new level of emotional investment we have from him. And the thing that was said at the end, and it was said by Triple H at the beginning of the show. I might have said Taker, I'm not sure. Hunter said that in that match at Extreme Rules, you could tell that Taker had a real sense of calm. That word calm is so important You can't hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball unless you're calm. You can't shoot that game-winning free throw unless you're calm. You can't bowl a 300 game unless you're calm. You can't drive a ball 400 yards unless you're calm. Whenever I'm training younger pro wrestlers, I always ask them, what's the one thing a Jedi needed to be in order to become a successful Jedi? You need it to be calm to be able to do all of these crazy things. As a pro wrestler, you're at your best when you're at a sense of peace and calm. Only when you're the most calm can you perform at the highest levels. And I saw that calm in Taker at Extreme Rules. That's why I think that him talking to Vince afterwards might have been a little bit more for the cameras than anything else. That's just my opinion.
Could it be a little bit of chasing the ghost in this way? Like, he did not like his performance against Goldberg. He did not like his performance in that tag match with Kane against DX. He did not like his performance with Roman Reigns at WrestleMania 33. You know, he wishes his match with John Cena at WrestleMania 34 was longer. But yet, after all those matches, he couldn't wait to get back into the ring to kind of prove himself. At Extreme Rules, as you said, pretty flawless match. He looked like old Taker, you know, no issues, no problems. His timings was impeccable. He looked great. Could it be like that calmness that you're talking about? Like, you know what? That's how I want to go out. That performance is the performance that I want to go out on. Could maybe his words be hollow in the way that he doesn't truly believe it, but you know what? If I'm going to go out, that's the match that's going to make me proud, you know, leaving.
That's not what he said to Vince. If he would have said that to Vince, different story. He's telling Vince, I don't feel it out there. My body doesn't feel right. I don't think there's so much self-doubt after the Extreme Rules match. If you would have told me that self-doubt was there with him and Vince after the Goldberg match, okay. Him and Brock, okay. After the tag match in Saudi, okay. Because now the self-doubt matches the sloppiness of the matches. But after Extreme Rules, dude, crowd was on fire. He was hitting on all cylinders. Everything was great after that match. To come in the back and go, Vince, I'm just not feeling it. My body's not there anymore, blah, blah, blah. Even his wife is saying, holy shit, he looks great. Yeah. I can tell that he feels great. It didn't add up to me. No big deal. Sometimes we got to do stuff for the camera. And like I said, that camera is right over their shoulders. Vince is always so careful about where the camera is because Vince doesn't want to say anything wrong in front of the camera, or he doesn't want to give too much away in front of the camera sometime. So that just struck me. I could be totally off base.
The story continues. Now we're going to get the final chapter. I believe next Sunday, the 21st, is the final chapter in this documentary series. And obviously, from judging from what we saw last night, it's going to be about the story with AJ Styles and the match at WrestleMania 36. So if you're the Undertaker, and you know, Shawn Michaels has talked about, like, he was at peace with, hey, you know what, my career's over. Like, I'm moving on. I got a family and I'm moving on from my career and I'm good with that. Undertaker has that family aspect as well, though it seems like he's having a lot of difficulty letting go, and I can completely understand that. Is he going to be okay with his last match being the match that we got at WrestleMania 36? In front of no fans, a cinematic type of a match. Do you think that The Undertaker would want that to be his final chapter of his career?
It was an extremely entertaining first time ever for the WWE. If that's the last time I ever see Taker perform, he goes out with me with a great taste in my mouth of The Undertaker, his legacy, what he's meant to the WWE, and the match against AJ was so much fun. But that's up for him to decide. As we've seen over the past, 7, 8, 9 years, he makes the decision on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
You know? And based on how he feels, on whether or not he thinks he can perform. And it's very difficult to step away because You know, when Hunter talks about chasing the dragon, that's kind of like a drug thing. Puff the magic dragon. What are you talking about? It's about a kid named Puff and his magic dragon, you know? So unless you listen to Peter, Paul, and Mary. the dragon is the rush that you get of being a pro wrestler. The dragon is the rush of the gong hitting and the place going berserk. It's that pop that runs through you. I told you once before, when I came through the curtain in Philadelphia at the Royal Rumble in 2015, that rush was so overwhelming, I blacked out, Dave. I blacked out. I don't even know. I struggled to stay in the moment. I did not know what was going on. That wall of pop, that wall of sound went right through me. If you've seen me lately, it's not that easy to go through me. So that's the rush, and you cannot describe it. It sends your adrenaline straight through your brains. And it's an amazing feeling. It's the same feeling Kiss gets, or Motley Crue gets, or AC/DC. Any of these bands that perform and get that rush of that adrenaline shot. And that's what we're always chasing.
And I'm wondering if we're going to get an answer about The Undertaker's future next week in this docuseries. You know, they've been kind of tight-lipped about what we're going to hear and what we're going to see throughout this entire thing. So I'm wondering if we're going to get some answers next Sunday on the WWE Network. Going to be very interested to hear.
I don't want to see Taker wrestle unless there's somebody that Taker absolutely needs to wrestle. It has to be the perfect person for the perfect story. I don't need to see Taker coming back gratuitously anymore. I saw that against Cena. It worked against Cena. I've seen him do the cinematic thing with AJ, so if we're going to do another cinematic thing, it better be as good as, if not better than, what he did with AJ.
I don't know if that opponent is out there, Bully. I mean,
the only one
that people are going to bring up is Sting. Because it never happened. But outside of that, I don't know if there's a story. He did AJ. He did Cena. You know, he did Goldberg. I think the only person that I personally would want to see Undertaker in the ring with would be Sting.
I guess there's rumors, reports that Sting is no longer under contract to the WWE. If there was any chance of that happening, I think they would have kept him under some kind of contract.
Yes.
I agree. Sting versus Taker, cinematic WWE style, would be very fun to watch.
Thanks for listening. Catch us Monday through Saturday on Busted Open from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern on SiriusXM. Fight Nation, Channel 156. The Busted Open Podcast.